Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. There is so much to talk about. Before we get into episode 179, those numbers keep getting bigger. I just want to talk about daylight savings time. Tony, I hate this. I hate it. We got to get rid of it somehow. There's no need for it.
Patrick must really hate it because he skipped his normal introduction and just went straight to the topic.
Right to it, man.
This is IT Babble. And Patrick is he's in Indianapolis and I'm in Texas. And he's angry about daylight savings time.
I am, yeah.
So it's I can tell you something funny, though.
Okay, yeah, let's
do it. I realized yesterday that I have not had daylight savings time for 16 years.
That's good. That's a good thing.
And I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And my wife was like, what are we supposed to do? So instead of Googling it, I called my friend Keith, who's a lawyer, because I knew it was a weekend and he was probably out with friends or on a date. And I really wanted to interrupt him with this question. So I called and let it ring like three times and he didn't answer. And I was like, this is urgent. He's like, what is it? And I'm like, when do I move the clock? Is it like right now or should I get up at like 2 a.m.? He's like, just do it before you go to bed. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to call you at 2 a.m. to make sure you got your ears done.
That's awesome. Yeah, I hate it. I woke up this morning and I have a clock. It's a dumb clock. You just plug it into the wall. It's not connected to anything. And it's at 8:30. And I was like, man, I usually get up like at 7:30. The kids get me up. And I was like, man, wow, the kids really let me sleep in, and I had a bunch of stuff I needed to get done today. I was like, I got lots of time. This is great. And so I'm out there and just hanging out with the family, and then I look at my phone, and it's like, oh, it's not 8:30, Patrick. It's 9:30. You have lost an hour of your day. And I was like, no. And then I'm trying to put the kids to bed, and they're like, but why do we have to go to bed? The sun is still out. The sun is still out. We don't need to go to bed. And, oh, I hate it. I hate it. It's just so stupid. So stupid. Get rid of it. I want to get. And what's the terrible thing is about a decade ago, Indiana didn't have daylight saving times. They'd gotten rid of it, and then they brought it back. Ugh.
I thought it was just part of the state.
I think at what? Well, Indianapolis is pretty close to Central Time. If you drive about an hour and a half west, you run into Central Time. Indianapolis, they're like, yeah, we're done with it. No daylight savings time. And then they brought it back. I don't know. It's so stupid.
Indiana, I've got to bring up this map. There's a map of this. Yeah, Indiana has areas that refuse to do it. It's pretty funny. There's just like counties in Indiana that won't do it. And so that's what happened. I'm sure Indianapolis joined those counties and then they opted out again. So it's pretty funny.
Oh, gosh. It's awful. It's just the worst. Get rid of it. So if you're in the country, like look at China. China is a giant country, huge country. It's about the size of continental U.S. And they don't do daylight savings time at all. And it's great. It's just, all right, that's it. I'm done ranting.
I can tell you, I think if they got rid of daylight savings time, probably worldwide, if it fell on a weekday, it would improve the stock market.
Ooh, maybe.
Because it must be very expensive every year for people to adjust. Now, computer systems are trained to adjust, but you know that even though they're programmed to adjust, someone monitors it to make sure they do adjust. Yeah. So every time you have to pay for somebody to do something, to verify something, every time you're like, okay, I know all of our phones will change automatically, but just make certain they do. Every time you add something to the workflow, it costs money somewhere.
Yep. And it's another point of failure too. Another point that can be exploited or failed or it's just, All right. Anyway, but on today's show, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus, online learning, from what we can tell, a fake story out of China about some industrious students, or maybe not completely fake, but maybe a little bit fake. You're going to talk to us about the ViewSonic ViewBoard, some hardware. And if we have time, yep. I'll talk about electronic tests and what I've learned this year with our Spanish teacher. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I talked about that on the last one or not. I don't think I did. I don't think we got to it. But it's okay.
If you did, I'll know. But then I'll just tell you that I really want to hear it one more time.
Perfect. That's great. That works fine. So, but first, let's talk about with coronavirus. We obviously have friends who are affected by this. They are teaching remotely from home. Their students, their schools are closed. And you've got here the first topic, Tony, online learning, biggest issues I am seeing, controlling students versus lesson prep.
So like this week, you know, like there was a big announcement by the National Association of Independent Schools, and they were like, hey, you guys, just in case people need to get ready, this is what we recommend. They basically were saying, if your enrollment contract doesn't include something to deal with this, you better fix it, and you should inform your parents. And what they mean is, if you haven't defined in your contract what learning time is or what teacher contact time constitutes, it's a problem. So, like, when you pay tuition, you actually are buying hours of teacher time. That's what you're buying. So if you're telling parents you have 182 school hours a year, you're buying contact time with teachers, coaches. That's what you're buying. And if you can't meet that, then parents could have an action to start asking for refunds, which it doesn't really matter how healthy a school is and how much money they have. They're not really set up to do a lot of refunds. It's not set up to do it. And most parents won't do this, but they're like, you know, make sure enrollment contracts are updated. Make sure that you define that in the case of like an emergency, classes will be conducted in a different environment. You don't have to say it will be like chat or whatever. You don't have to be definitive, but you should let them know it won't be on premises. So anyway, like everybody, we get this information. We start rolling stuff out. I was prepared for it. Patrick, you and I had practiced. Actually, I set up our entire system a couple weeks before we needed to get into this. And then a week before I brought this to my school as an issue, Patrick and I got set down and we were testing technology out, and I started making training videos. So all that was organized and I'm feeling pretty confident. And then I start getting questions from teachers, and they're like, well, what if, you know, how do I control them? I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, what if they're at home and they start doing this? I'm like, you can't do anything. Like, you can't control it. Like, can I take control of their screen and their laptop? And I'm like, no, not unless they opted in. Like, this isn't like we're not using a day-to-day technology here. This is an emergency tool that we're lucky to have, and it works really well. And it's really designed for companies to use. And when you use it, it's because you've organized this an online meeting with your students to talk to them. And I started thinking about this, and I'm like, if I had a group of students, like if I were teaching classes right now, do you know what I would be doing, Patrick? I would be developing 2 to 3 weeks worth of lessons that I can send to the kids so they can just work on them. I wouldn't be trying to like figure out how to meet the kids online in a big group and control them and talk to them on a camera.
No.
I would be building lessons. Like, even if I didn't have an online classroom, I would put everything in PDFs so that they can't mess with the formatting. And I would get all the sources together, everything. I would make lesson packets, basically. And if I needed to, I would print them all out. I would, as an emergency. And I would hand them out to all of my kids and say, I've emailed you this, but also here's a paper copy. Mm-hmm. This is what you need to work on. It tells you how to turn it in. And maybe it's like you can turn it all in when you come back. But I would, that's what I'd be focused on, making my lessons. So then I started looking around and I started seeing all these posts people are making. Like, this is, you know, and it's great. Like, people are being really supportive. But what's all the support? What apps to use? What websites to use? You know, what technology is working? How to manage your kids online? And I'm why? Like, this is an opportunity, really. Like, you could prep, especially, like, what if you teach four sections of English 1 and that's all you teach? That's the same class four times.
Yeah.
So you get all your lessons prepped. You do it for, like, 2 weeks, maybe three. And then you tell the kids if it goes longer than 3 weeks, there's going to be a meeting. You preset the date. And it doesn't mean you can't meet kids individually on and off. So while they're working on this, they have the option to email you, schedule meetings, chat with you. But it seems like that's the better way to go, because you're a teacher that works in a classroom every day and you're really not comfortable teaching online full time. And it's a new thing and it's an emergency. So it seems like you would want to use that technology in a smart way, but not overuse it or not become immediately kind of dependent on it. Mm-hmm. And this discomfort about how do we control them? Like, there was a kid who, like, this teacher was practicing and that's great. And he was practicing with his students. And this kid, like, posted this, like, super inappropriate video in their, like, group discussion online. And the teacher couldn't delete it because there's a setting on this, in this tech that, you know, doesn't allow people to delete certain things. And it's really because it sees everybody as an equal player, not as a student and a teacher.
Yeah.
Like, it sees them as, like, people working together, and they don't let you delete your coworker stuff. So I was able to go in and fix that. And so he could delete it as, like, the kind of chat room owner or whatever. But I was talking with him. I'm like, did you report this kid to the principal? Did you take him to the, because there's a disciplinary process. He's like, no. I'm like, well, that's number one. Like, this isn't an IT problem. Like, you need to go tell, you need to go turn this kid in and then tell him if it happens again, we're just going to take him out of all the online learning system and good luck. He won't be able to get his work done. But the initial thing wasn't to do that. It was, how can I manage it with the technology? Like, that's when I'm like, these are just the wrong questions.
Yeah, completely wrong questions. Yeah. It can't be business as usual. You can't just be like, okay, it's 8:30 a.m. I saw this at an international school's distance learning program. They're like, so school day will continue as normal, and that's completely unrealistic. They're like, if you have math from 8:30 to 9:15, then between 8:30 and 9:15, you have to be online with your teacher, and that's completely I understand that it's a regiment and we're going to keep the kids, but that's uncontrollable. There's no way you can control that, and there's no way that you can enforce that. It's not realistic, and this teacher is being very unrealistic as well.
I spoke to a school last week in Korea, and I'm like, so what are you guys doing with your schedule? I'm really curious. So I put together a schedule, like, and sent it off to my school. And I'm like, I think this would work. And it was based off of what I would call the type of schedule that is ran for software development teams that work at major, like, big companies. And what they do is there's a bunch of teams working on a bunch of stuff. So if you look at those teams as classes, they have a 10 to 15 minute touch base point every day. And that point is set in stone and nobody can opt out of it. And it's a touch base point, and then everybody goes back to work.
Hmm.
So I pitched that to my school as, like, a really good model, because then all the meetings for every teacher are done before, like, 11:30 in the morning. All the meetings are done and all the kids are done being online. They don't actually have to be online anymore if they don't need to be to get their work done. But so I talked to this school in Korea, and I'm like, so what are you guys doing with your schedule? And they're like, well, they decided, just like you said, Patrick, to run it as it is. And they said what's happening. So the teachers are getting online, the kids are getting online because they're diligent Korean students, and they're sitting in there for an hour, and the teacher, all they do is try to like get through their lesson while the kids are chewing. They're nonstop eating. The kids are just eating. The teacher said they're eating like every class, the kids are eating and drinking all day because they're at home, and it's really distracting. I'm like, of course they are. Like, they're sitting there on the computer they probably play video games on, in the room they probably play video games in. They've got all their snacks. They probably got chat going off to the side on a laptop
Oh,
or
yeah.
something separate.
Oh, yeah, completely. You know that's going on. They probably had the TV on or music on as well, maybe headphones in or something. Oh,
And
yeah.
so it's very distracting. Like, the teacher's trying to give a normal lecture. And last night I talked to my friend Nick, and Nick is an older guy. Like, he's like in his 50s. He's been in education forever, and he's not like technophobic, but he doesn't really use any technology unless he has to. And he teaches English and history, and he's like, yeah, he's like, it wasn't really a big deal for me because I always have at least 1 or 2 weeks of substitute lesson plans available in case I get sick or something. And I took those and packaged them up, and some people showed me how to get all that stuff online. So I just told my kids, you need to work on this stuff over a couple of weeks. And if you have a problem, you need to email me and let me know. And I'm only really com he's like, I'm only really comfortable using Skype. So here's my Skype information, and we can have a call.
Yeah, there you go.
And I was like, he's like, everybody's getting hung up on all this online learning stuff. But he said, if you don't have a couple of weeks worth of lessons prepared, you're in trouble. And he's right. Like, you need to actually have the content prepared. And how many teachers now with technology, with YouTube, with Google, do their lessons like literally the day before, Patrick? How many do you think crank those out like the day before?
It's a lot. It's a lot, I'm sure.
I agree. It's a lot.
I used to be that when I first started teaching. I was just, day to day by the seat of my pants. But I quickly learned, because it burned me so many times, that I need to plan unit to unit and have everything for each unit ready to go out and roll out whenever.
Yeah, so the assistant head of school, he was chatting with me, and he's like, what's our biggest problem? He's like, what's going to fail? He's like, what do we have to worry about? He's like, is it email? Is it this or is it that? He's like, I know everything's in the cloud. And I'm like, this is your biggest problem. Your highest level classes at the school are using technology from Pearson, and all they're like ebooks, like e-textbooks. And I'm like, those e-textbooks have a version that everybody can download, but they haven't done that. They're using the online version of the textbook. And Pearson, I'm like, do you remember what happened last, like this year when school started with Pearson? He's like, oh yeah, like none of their stuff worked.
Yeah.
I'm like, why was that? It's like, because everybody's starting school at the same time, and their servers couldn't handle it. And I'm like, what did the head of math say? He said that happens every year. So that means that maybe some of these companies aren't ramping up because they've gone out to Rackspace, they've gone out to Amazon, they've gone to Microsoft, they've gone to Google. They made a deal for their bandwidth and their servers, and they paid for it already. And do you think if they're for profit, they're going to be beefing that up unless people complain? No.
No, probably not. But they might be, they might do something generous in this particular
But my. But
situation.
my point was, Pearson doesn't have to beef it up. They sold you a book. They have a PDF that you can download. And so you need, next step here, tell every single teacher, download every PDF version of every ebook that they use in class. Like, you really need to think about having tools to communicate, but you need to also think about having access to your content in as many ways as possible. Because once the load hits, like if a bunch of schools in America go online immediately, you're going to have problems.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't really think is going to happen. I hope not. I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, anyway, get those lesson plans developed, people.
Get them. Get them and package them.
Not one day, not 2 days, 2 weeks worth. Two weeks worth.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Be prepared. Be proactive. You never know. Well,
that Spanish teacher we used to work with who teaches AP Spanish, Castro. That's the guy's name. His name's Castro. He's kind of like Kramer in Seinfeld, for real. I remember, like, he's worked at some, and he still does work at some, like, really, really high-end schools. He's a very good IB Spanish teacher, not AP, IB. And he works with a lot of kids who are fluent. They speak Spanish, so they're doing stuff in IB, native in Spanish. And one day I walked into his class, and some kid said, "Oh, I'm done." And he said something to them. I'm like, "What? Did you just use the word brick?" He's like, "Yeah, every year I give the kids a brick." And he pulled it out, and it was like 500 pages. And he's like, "There's no way to finish this in 2 years. So I give this to all the IB kids in, you know, when they start. And then sometimes I refresh it in their grade 12 and give them another brick. And whenever they say they're finished, I tell them to pull out the brick and work on different language activities, because you can't ever be finished with Spanish."
Oh, yeah, that's true. There you go.
So that guy, just in his practice, is ready for anything.
That's good. Yeah, and we worked with I don't know if you remember the economics teacher that we worked with in Dubai. I think you were there. He was an IB econ teacher, and he walked in, and he had the whole 2 years planned out. The whole 2 years, and he had it on a wiki page, you know, which doesn't exist anymore. But it was there. Everything was right there. And he goes, "If you're not here, this is what you have to do. If I'm not here, this is what you have to do." But it was just all right there. It was great. So, but you know what? You know what's not so great, Tony? One-star reviews.
Oh, so yeah, I sent this to you. I figured that you'd heard about it. So basically, a bunch of public schools and private schools in China, they had to start teaching online, and they were, you know, when you're in China, you want to use technology that doesn't require a VPN. And this Chinese company had a chat program that was popular. But you know what they did? They beefed it up. They added an online classroom. They actually did a lot of stuff to, like, for free support schools. And there's no, you know, there's nothing wrong with the tech. Everything's working. So these kids, a lot of these kids, especially middle schoolers all over the country, realized, I guess they were in different chat forums and stuff, they all realized that they were using this app. And so they came up with a plan, a nationwide middle school plan, Patrick. Middle Schoolers United. And they went on to the various stores, because it's not the Play Store, right? It's like whatever store, like the Xiaomi store or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They went on to the various Chinese app stores and tried to get this thing taken down by giving it a one-star rating and complaining about it.
And did it get? And I mean, the story I had heard, and it was a tweet. My wife had shared with me a tweet that she saw on social media. And it said that they had succeeded, but I don't know if that's true.
I could not find any. So this is why I put it in here, because we talked about social media like before. We talk about it all the time. The only thing I could find was that the students tried, and Ding Talk, that's the name of the app, realized they were doing it and actually made like a little animated thing and put it out on the internet to let the kids know they knew what they were doing. But in fact, they don't take down apps because of reviews, and the kids needed to stop because it wasn't going to work, and they did not take it down. But the story I saw on Twitter said that the students succeeded and the app was taken down.
Yeah. But I don't think
so. I couldn't verify that. I could only verify that the kids tried. They literally did try, but they did not succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah, I don't think that 1-star reviews are going to get it out of there. If that were true, Go Guardian, Go Guardian, which is what we use to manage our Chromebooks. That has a ton of 1-star reviews too. And people are just like, "I hate this." This is invading my privacy. This is stomping on my constitutional rights and all this other fun stuff. But all right, there we have it. That's pretty cool. Don't believe everything on social media, people. We've said it once, we've said it twice. But there may be something out there they can believe in, Tony, and it's made by ViewSonic.
Man, Patrick, I'm just going. Like, I'm not getting a break here. Okay, so
I've got plenty of things to talk about on this one too. So
Patrick's been reviewing like streaming tech. For Apple TVs, yeah. Entertainment, etc. I took a step back and I'm like, all right, what do I not like in my classroom, like as a teacher? And I need to put this another way. What I really like is complete modularity. I want to move everything around when I want to move it. And that means I don't like projectors. I don't like projectors. I don't like how they're wired in. I don't like the holes that are put in the ceiling. I don't like the holes that are put in the wall. I don't like the cabling that you have to deal with. I don't like the audio. I don't like any of the stuff to do with projectors. So I'm like, there must be a good product out there that is affordable, that is portable, supports AirPlay, and supports Miracast for Windows, and maybe supports Chromecast. There must be somebody else had to have this idea. So I searched and I searched, and I found one product, the ViewSonic ViewBoard. And then I contacted a big school in Dallas, and I contacted that school because the person that runs their IT there is the accreditation member that does the accreditation for most of the independent schools in Texas for technology. So he travels to all the schools and does your technology accreditation. And I was like, hey, man, have you heard of this? He's like, I've not only heard of it, but we're exclusively switching to them. I was like, yes. So then I'm like, I've done my research and I got, because I was able to get some pricing lists from states that have deals with ViewSonic to see what schools are paying.
Yep.
I'm like, done my research, but I got to know, what's the cost? And he's like, per board, we're paying less than we paid for projectors.
Whoa. And I was like, wait a minute here. Hold on. Hold on, yeah. Sir. Okay. All right. I wonder what projectors were they using?
Here's the problem. His school uses Windows.
Oh, okay.
All right. Then I was like, how much have you tested the AirPlay out? He's like, well, we haven't really tested that much because we use, you know, we're Windows based. He's like, but people that have used it said it works. But I can't tell you how good it is. I'm like, fair enough. And I'm like, do you have the additional add-ons? There's a Windows add-on, so you can actually add a Windows PC to it.
And
it's a Chromebook add-on.
Yeah, these are modular. For people who are, I've seen that these are modulars. You literally can slide them in, and if something goes wrong, you can slide it out and have a warm spare and just slide it in, and it'll just boot up, and everything will be great again.
Right.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet.
So I went to a conference to test one of these out in Austin. I tested out the technology. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered a ViewBoard, and I had them include the additional Chromebook like module. So it showed up. I assembled it with one other person. We assembled the whole thing with the stand, 75 inches. The assembly was actually really easy. I mean, the board's heavy, but the stand isn't. So once you attach it, it's easy to
move around. Yeah.
And dude, it just totally works. Like, you turn it on, there's a splash screen, and you touch, like, there's like a wireless display. You just touch the screen, and then it's like, if you're connecting with Windows, do this. If you're connecting with Chrome, do this. If you're connecting with Apple, do this. That's it. So then I connected my laptop, and what am I going to do? I'm just going to play YouTube because I'm like, let's see what happens with HD video. There's no reason to waste any time.
Yep.
I was able to stream right to the board. They both are on the same network. So, you know, it doesn't make its own network. They're both on the same Wi-Fi. And then I'm like, all right, let's see what happens. I go up to the board. The board comes with pens. You don't have to use them. But they very nicely magnetically attach to the bottom.
Oh,
But you can
that's a
just use
plus.
your
That's a
fingers. I took the
plus.
pen, brought it up to the board, and this little thing popped out like on the screen. And let me tell you, Patrick, while you're in an airplane, you're in an airplane, right?
Yep.
You can annotate on top of your computer's AirPlay.
That's nice. That's very nice.
And it saves it to the view board because the view board's running Android. It's got its own like storage. You can basically interact with your AirPlay contents without anything but the pen and like a four little option menu. It's very simple. So we're lo you're looking at like $3,300 for a 75-inch 4K screen with a stand, and that stand comes with a tray underneath the screen, so you can actually be a teacher and put books and whatever you want on it. It's a quite large tray, actually. I was kind of shocked at how big it is. And the sound was really good. Like, I didn't feel like I needed additional sound. And you can go up to 95 inches modular with this thing. So you can get a 95-inch screen that moves around 4K with sound, built-in streaming. That means you plug it into power and connect it to the Wi-Fi. That's it. There's nothing else.
Nice. Very nice. So,
Now,
okay, go ahead.
this is where you get sucked in. This is where you get sucked in. I don't like the Chromebox. And I asked the guy in Dallas about this. He's like, we don't use the Chromebox and we don't use the Windows module. I know they have like really cool features. But here's the thing. I want a display and I want it to be wireless. I want it to have really good resolution. I want it to have good sound. I occasionally would like to walk up and annotate on it. But most of the time, what am I doing? I'm just wirelessly displaying my laptop, right?
Yep.
Or my iPad or my phone, or I want my kids to do that. I don't really want to stand in front of the screen all day. And the second you add one of these other things, that's where you get sucked in, and now you're back up standing in front of the screen.
I see. Yep. I
Now,
see
when
what
you
you're
put this
saying.
thing in, it does have a whiteboard mode, and when you put it in whiteboard mode for education, it's an old school, it looks like an old school chalkboard and actually writes in chalk, like
Oh,
electronic chalk, which is nice.
that's pretty cool.
So whiteboard mode is great, really easy to use. I don't think that's a wasted feature, but you don't really need to use whiteboard mode and use your laptop at the same time. You just don't need to do that. At least I don't think most people do.
Yeah.
So they do have software. They have good software. They have a very cool feature where you bind like your Google account is connected to ViewSonic's server. And then when you go to the board, you can use your phone QR code in, and it actually logs you into the board with your Google Drive.
Oh,
So you
that's
can grab
nice.
all your files.
That's very nice.
Yeah, that's totally.
I like that. So last year we
This.
bought a I'm just
Yeah, go.
going to jump in here real quick. We bought a BenQ interactive display. It sounds very similar to the ViewSonic. In fact, the we didn't go with the BenQ didn't have doesn't have a cart that you can attach it to. So we actually bought ViewSonic's cart. And that thing was is awesome. It sounds exactly like what we have, but it's good and it's really we really like it. We have it in our library where people can kind of come and have we have an Apple TV hooked up into it, and it's just Android. It's not Chrome or anything, but not a Chromebox or anything like that or Windows. Though it is an option if we wanted to put. Windows on it. I don't know. I don't think we can put Chrome OS on it, but we can't put Windows on it. So,
I
anyway,
think,
go ahead.
yeah, I think the, it's like, do you want to broadcast the content on your device or do you want to walk up to the screen and do something?
Yeah.
And I think that's usually where most people are at. The built-in Android doesn't have a lot of features, but it's got a full Chrome browser. And I was able to play YouTube. I was able to log into my Drive just in the built-in system without using the Chromebox, without using the QR code scanning. So, without having an account with ViewSonic or any other features with the ViewSonic system, I was able to do all of that. So like you could go up to the screen, log in manually to your Google Drive, and then pull up Google Slides or whatever. You can go through it normally and annotate on it. You can annotate on anything that shows up on the screen. So I'm just saying that like you can add all these additional features. You can add the Windows 10 unit is cool. They have their own like classroom software, all this stuff, but now you're back up in front of the screen. So like if you're like me and you just want a good modular classroom where you can project stuff and share, like let your kids jump on whenever you want. You just don't need all those bells and whistles. But if you look at the cost of laser projection and you add an Apple TV to that and you add the installation and you have to destroy your ceiling and or your wall, it seems like this is for me right now, this is a no-brainer. I'm like, this is the way to go.
The one thing when we put this in our library, and we had a lot of people come and ask me about it. They're like, "Oh, what's this do?" What? And I sat there and showed it to them. It was pretty cool. But one thing is like, are you going to put this in every classroom? And I said, "No, we're going to do laser projection in every classroom." And they said, "Good. I don't." Our rooms are the way that they're constructed is there's not a lot of free wall. There's not a lot of free wall space. And for a lot of people, they would have to lose their physical whiteboard. And they're like, I do not want to give that up at all. And that's what we would have to take down in order to put, like, to mount one of these. And I guess we could put it on a cart, but our rooms are not, especially our grades 1 through 4, our rooms are not that big. So it would be definitely in the way. The teachers that do come in the library and use it really like it a whole lot because it's on a card and they can put it anywhere in the library that they want. They're like, okay, we're going to have class over here. Okay, we're going to have class over here to make room for this other group coming in. And it makes our library a bit more modular and a bit more traffic comes through our library then because there's not just one thing happening in there now. Now there can be two different things happening in there, which is wonderful, which is great. I love it. I do like it.
And I can tell you from recent experience, this board is superior in every way to anything that Smart or Promethean make. So,
I would
and
say
they,
my
the thing is,
BenQ is better too.
they've got the brand in the market, but it's like, no. Look, this ViewSonic View Board is a commercial grade screen, and it's very popular outside of education. They just made an education component for it, and they're pushing it into the education market. But it's the commercial grade screen, which means it's got a lot of ways to connect it, can be managed on your network, it can be repaired on site. Like, it's got everything. Now, here's the coolest thing that I saw. If you really wanted to spend the money, Patrick, are you
Okay,
ready for this?
I'm ready.
ViewSonic makes a stand that is a smart stand that lets you automatically raise the board up and down,
I saw
and
that,
it
yeah.
will lower the board and tilt it so it's like a table.
I
You
have
can
seen
actually
that, yeah.
build like interactive, applications. So if you really want to spend the money, you can go full motorized.
It was interesting when we were looking at the BenQ panel. Somebody from Taiwan, from BenQ's headquarters out of Taiwan, I think 4 or 5 times they send people from Taiwan over to talk with businesses and schools. And they have, anyway. And he goes, a lot of these panels that come out, he pointed out Promethean and SmartBoard in particular. He goes, they don't make their own screens. He goes, they don't do it.
No, they don't.
They are buying their screens from Samsung, or they're buying it from BenQ, or they're buying it from ViewSonic, or they're buying it from a place that actually makes their own screens. And he goes, so they don't have any real control over the quality of those screens. And he yeah he just said that they're just selling you a basic screen with their software on it. And I don't like their software for Promethean or Smart. I'm not a fan of either. So I like this where
Yeah,
it's
I
just
agree. And
pretty bland, and you can put up there whatever you want to put up there, and you can annotate on it whatever you want to annotate on it whenever at any time. I think that's great. It's good
yeah,
stuff.
so I'm a fan and I'm going to keep working. I've got another ViewSonic device I'm working with that's a little bit different, and it's for people who have laser projection and want to turn those laser projectors into something interactive. So hopefully I'll have a report for that in a week or two.
Oh, yeah. I'd be interested to hear about that, because that's what we have. And by the way, our laser projectors are $1,000 a piece, right around there. So whereas these boards are, what, $3,500 to $4,500, I guess, depending on which brand and size you're getting?
Yeah, I think here in Texas, though, when we add a new projector to a classroom, our total cost, if it's an interactive projector, is $5,200.
Yeah.
That is the projector. It's a laser projector. It's a new whiteboard, because you have to change the whiteboards if people are going to be touching them with the pens.
Yeah.
It's all the cabling. It's rigging it into the audio. It's not just buying the projector. It's everything.
Yeah, we bought simple projectors where we literally took an old projector out and just remounted the new projector.
If you can do that, that's great. But check this out. The last three Epson versions that have come out that are all laser, the last three don't fit on the same bracket.
That's right. That is correct.
What kind of racket is that? Like, you have to remount it. And I can tell you, when you put holes in concrete a few times, you can't really remount it that easily. Put it like an inch above.
Oh.
So that's why I hate it, really, to be honest with you. I don't like, imagine you have a new, and I had this in Korea, new classroom, brand new buildings. Some of the projection was wrong. You know, it was installed incorrectly in some rooms, especially in the elementary school. The wiring wasn't correct. So I met with the vendor. I'm like, can we fix all this? And they're like, yeah, we can fix it. It's fine. You know, we did it wrong. But, you know, fixing it means leaving evidence that it was somewhere else. Like,
yeah.
Oh, wait. Yeah. You said, we moved it. Yeah, you did move it. But what about this hole here? And like, what's all this wiring over here? Why is there a hole over there? Like, it just makes your rooms look like, look horrible.
They look really bad. Yeah.
So I'm just like, there must be a better way. And the other thing, too, is the AirPlay is built into the screen. So if nothing else, take that away. Like, if you're just want a portable board that you can roll around and anybody can use it, the ViewSonic ViewBoard works with Apple, Windows, and Chromebook, all three.
That's very compelling. That's very, very, very compelling. Yeah.
So that's enough right there for at least a shared, like a single shared device that people check out from the library.
Yeah.
Why buy something that you also have to mount Apple TV on?
Yeah. Yeah. And our BenQ, it didn't have any of that stuff. I mean, it's Android, so Chromecast would work on it, I think. But we slapped an Apple TV on there and it works really well. And of course there's HDMI inputs and anyway, but yeah, you're right. You're right. If you had it, that's good. That's really good. That's really good. Tony, do you think we got time for our last topic here? Do you think we got time to squeeze it in?
I hope so, as long as I can stop talking for a while.
All right, you got it. Okay, so here we go, Tony. I'm going to lay out the scenario for you. I'm going to lay it out. Our Spanish teacher, he wants to do his assessments online. He wants to use online assessment tool, like Edulastic. You know, he wants to put all his tests online. So the kids come in on test day, and they log into Edulastic, and the questions are right there, and it's easy for him to grade. It's easy for him to leave comments for each individual question. It's easy for him to go through all the questions in the test again after, you know, like after everybody's test has been graded and stuff like that. Our kids are sneaky, Tony. They're sneaky. They're super sneaky. So this is Spanish. So what do you think they were doing during their Spanish test when they're on their Chromebooks?
Trying to cheat.
Yes. They were using online translators. Using Google Translate. So he's like, how do I keep them from doing it? And so we have Go Guardian, so he can see what's going on, like what each device has, like what web page is on each device. But the kids can be really quick, and he's walking around the classroom and answering questions, so he's not just sitting there watching his computer. So kids, you know, open up a tab, quickly do it and then close the tab, like translate, close it. Or they'll have the Google Translate, or they'll have an extension installed on their Chrome. So they just hit the extension and they type it in and get the answer and they close the extension. So there's no. So he's like,
going to a website.
They're not going to a website. So at first they were. So he goes, how do I keep them off the website? And I was like, okay, we have GoGuardian. Here's what you can see. But on GoGuardian, you can limit how many tabs they can have open. Just limit it to 2 tabs. So you have 1 tab that opens up Edulastic. And then when you log in, there's like, it's a whole different URL. So it's like, and then you can limit it to just those 2 URLs. And he's like, okay. And we did that in a good, but the extensions. So we shut down extensions. We shut them down. Yep. The students were not happy. I became the man, Tony. I became the man. Shut down extensions.
Can you time this stuff so you can shut it down when there's an assessment, or do you have to keep it shut down all the time?
We just keep it shut down all the time. What Google will allow us is on the Chrome store, we can have our own Chrome store. So we can say, and we made a Google form and like, hey, if there's an extension that you want, like some people have a to-do list extension. I'm like, you got it. That we can whitelist that. We add it to our Google Chrome store. They can go to it and download it. No problem. No problem. So okay. They were doing that. But guess what else? They found another way, Tony. What we saw is that kids were opening up, they would open up a new tab. Like they would close the sign in tab because they were already signed in and open up a new tab. And then the, you know how they have predictive search, right? So as you start typing your search, it starts giving you results immediately.
I see. Like in Google.
In Google, yeah. And if you start typing, if you type in a Spanish word, well, it'll tell you. It's like, hey, your language is set to English, and you're typing in a Spanish word. I bet you want to know what that is in Spanish or in English. And it will just start translating. You can be like, "What is hello in Spanish?" And you don't have to hit enter. It'll start giving you results. Pretty crazy.
So. Are they doing all this in Edulastic?
Yeah, so they'll have Edulastic open in 1 tab. They have another tab that was, so they're just opening a tab, but they're not typing in a URL. So there's nothing for GoGuardian to block. There's nothing for, you know, it just, GoGuardian, it's like, hey, this is an empty tab. There's nothing here. There's no data here.
Doesn't Edulastic have, like, I don't know if you can deploy this in Chromebook, so, but, don't they have a exam mode, like an exam browser?
They do. They have it's called kiosk mode. We played around with it a little bit with map testing, but there are resolution issues. If the resolution isn't just right, then it freaks out and it may not load the test or may not load a question or anyway. So we found you can do this. If you go into the admin, Google's admin, you can actually turn off that predictive search. You can shut it down.
Oh. So Patrick, I'm sure that you found, besides doing this, I'm sure that you also found other ways to deal with it. Because I believe I read this article. So weren't you able to get some diagnostics that kind of definitively show which kid was cheating?
Yes. What we would do,
GoGuardian product seems pretty solid.
It's really
and
good.
I know you're diving into it and doing more with it all the time.
Yeah. So it would go after for every class that you have, and you have to start a class either manually or schedule it with GoGuardian. At the end of the class, it shuts. You can go back and you can look at everybody's, and they call it a timeline, and it'll show you like what tab you have. So if somebody, what it should be, it should just be like a solid tab for Edulastic. It should just be like solid. There really shouldn't be any breaks. But we can tell if a kid is on Edulastic and then a new tab, Edulastic, a new tab, new tab, new tab, Edulastic, new tab, Edulastic, new tab, then we know that that person is cheating. That person is like, why are they opening? There's no reason for them to open tabs over and over and over again. And that tab, if they type in a search and if they leave it there long enough, Edulastic will record the search. They'll record like what was typed in there. even though they don't hit enter. So we were able to kind of see like what they were searching for. And we brought one kid, the Spanish teacher. He goes, I think this kid did it. So we brought this one kid in, and he didn't break down. He's like, oh no, yeah, I totally did that. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it, you know. And Spanish teacher's like, well, that's cheating, and we're gonna have to, you know, call your parents and we'll work it out. And so, but yeah, we have been able to turn that off. So, but I have definitely become, I've become the man. I've become the institution.
It's okay. Like, you know, the other thing I used to do, you know, I was, especially the last few years when I've been working with in environments where there's some serious, student hacking and cheating going on, and they're constantly trying to beat like the system. I did start doing weekly reports and having meetings with people and meetings with students. And I found it really helpful to sit down and say, you know, this week, this is all of your, like, I looked at all the kids in your English class, and this is what their data looks like, and this is what yours looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that? And also, you seem to have a low grade in your class, but the other kids are doing okay. And also, your teacher says that you've got, you know, some issues, like you behavioral problems, like whatever. Like, it's clear something's going on. Like, you need to understand that you're not hiding. So,
yeah,
we can tell that you're doing all this stuff. Like, using your technology isn't giving you a place to hide. And I found it very helpful, because I wasn't disciplining the students. I was just bringing it up. Like, you're in this meeting with me. This is a meeting. And you're in this meeting because something's wrong. And we should talk about it now before it gets worse.
Yeah, it's a good way of doing it.
And
sure,
when they would see it, like, oh, I was using a VPN, I was doing this, I'm like, yeah, you're doing all that stuff, and I can't see everything that you're doing, but you understand that you're outside of the pattern. And so that, you know, brings questions.
Yeah,
and
that's a red flag.
When I ask you those questions.
Yeah.
So it's not about if I'm spying on you. It's just that you're outside of the, like, here's a graph, and everybody's here, and you're there by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the kid, that Chinese kid, like, man, you pulled 30 terabytes of data in 7 days. We got to have a talk.
Yeah.
It wasn't 30 terabytes. It was 3 terabytes, but that was for real.
That's,
and I'm like,
unbelievable.
And we had a meeting, and he's a smart kid. And I was like, what's going on? Like, you realize the average bandwidth per student per week is about 15 GB, and you're at 3 TB. He's like, the internet is so good in Korea, because he just come from China. He's like, so I'm just trying to get all my Chinese shows. And he'd just been power downloading like TV shows and movies from China. And I'm like, okay, so you're aware that you're not allowed to do that. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you have to stop. Obviously, like, we noticed immediately, you can't pull that much data. And I was only running the report once a week, and then I started running the report on Wednesdays so that nobody could ever download for a whole week. I'm like, okay, if you beat me, that's fine. You're gonna download Monday, Tuesday, I'm gonna catch you on Wednesday. That's fine. I lose 2 days, I win 3 days, I win.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome. But anyway, that's my sneaky kid story. And that was a fun post to write. That was a, because we went down the rabbit hole pretty deep on that one. We did not expect it to.
Didn't you have a kid draft an email to you about how you need to turn Go Guardian off because it's ruining his life?
So yeah, a little bit. So there was a. I'll just briefly. Go Guardian has a brand new app, iOS and Android app for parents, and the school can set it up, and they can link the child's account with the parent's account, you know, using email. And then the parent, they can't do anything, but they can view, they can see, like, overall, like, what they've been doing, like, the past week, the past month, what are the top sites they go to. And then they can dig down, like, in, for, like, the past 48 hours, and they can look and see exactly what they've been searching for and watching and looking at. Like, they have that ability now to, they can't block or do anything, But they can sit. The idea is that they can see what their children are doing online, and then they can talk to them about it. If it's something inappropriate or something that, you know, maybe they're not comfortable with, or, you know, anyway. And so this one student, he wrote me and he goes, "What are you doing?" Yeah, he was like, "You're ruining my life. Please, there's so much already of content filtering in my life. I just, please stop it." It was pretty funny. It was pretty well written.
You are ruining my life.
Yeah,
how you know
I'm becoming the man.
That, Patrick, you know, you work with a lot of middle school kids. That's how you know you're doing a good job.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm not going to please them all, but, you know, their parents do thank me from time to time. So, anyway, that's it. That's our show, folks. I don't have anything else. Tony, do you have anything to add?
No, I'm all out. I'm all talked out.
All right. Yeah. You had a lot of the topics there. We're at 55 minutes, so it's kind of a little longer than what we normally do. But anyway,
I might have to do a part one and a part 1A.
Maybe. Anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.